And good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's time now for our May edition of Campus Connection. I'm your host, Angela Denning, and I'm joined here in the studio by Superintendent Erica Kluepainter and School Board President Sarah Holmgren. I'm going to do a mic check now. Hello, okay. And thanks for joining me.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I can hear both of you just fine.
Great.
So tonight, it's a regular meeting. So it'll be in person in the middle and high school library at 6 o'clock. People can listen to it on KFSK because we'll be broadcasting the meeting live. I feel like there's a lot going on. It's, you know, it's May. School's almost out. One thing that you're going to be looking at is, I think, just approving an agreement that's already been negotiated and agreed upon with the support personnel union, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sarah, yeah, it was pretty fast, actually, negotiations. And so they brought it to their membership and were able to, you know, explain, you know, the contract, and they voted on it and passed it. And so now we'll kind of make it more official.
So this is a 3-year contract. Mm-hmm. So the first year will be the 2022-23 school year, the last 3 years. What are some of the highlights that you could share that are in the agreement?
I think, you know, one of the more important ones, and probably more important for them and also just as a general, is it getting the hourly rates up for staff there. We're recognizing that they were probably a little too low, and also the job market has changed, and I'm just trying to keep pace with inflation, which is almost impossible to do. But and I think we added a few days to personal days for not full-time staff, but the 9-month staff. I would say those are pretty the bigger highlights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed that the first year raise was $2 an hour. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about that as a, you know, a school board member? Is that something that the union brought to the table, or?
Yeah, that's usually, you know, we're not really sure. Each time they come up, they give us what they're interested in changing. And so then we kind of go from there. And sometimes we have some things that we want to change too. In this case, they brought us salary requests, and then we were able to kind of come in between, you know, find a common ground in between pretty quickly on that. So I think you could, you know, you look at the old salary schedule, you could certainly have a strong argument for some of those classifications being too low for the quality and quantity of work that they were doing. So that's where, you know, I had to make needed to make those adjustments, but it's just making sure we can still stay within a budget that we can handle. You know, of course, in a perfect world, you could be even more competitive, but we are limited by what we can, you know, we can't raise our own money. So it's what we get from the state, federal, and local contributions. So,
Erica, anything to add about the wages going up?
Well, I do think we all came in with, you know, knowing that we wanted to make some of those adjustments and changes, just looking, like Sarah was saying, at the job market and just sort of the competition for staff and good quality staff. And then also just wanting to really recognize the quality work that our staff, that we currently have, you know, in our district. We want to recognize and acknowledge, you know, their efforts throughout, not just even during COVID, but just in general, you know, working with the students that they do and providing the support that they do for our teachers. And we have really hardworking classified staff. So it felt good to be able to do that. And we felt like it was a reasonable wage. And we also spread out on the bottom end, trying to attract some of our, you know, new folks to our district. So we, it used to be kind of bunched up, like 0 to 2 years was sort of the same salary for a while. And so we opened that up as well, which I think was important. And then continuing to just keep that increase going a little bit on those next couple years, you know, within a budget. I mean, it's all, everything comes down to money. So every change you make to an agreement, even outside just the regular wages, you know, has an impact, whether it's leave or, you know.
So speaking of budget, there's a lot of bills in the legislature. Have you heard anything about changing the BSA-based student allocation for inflation? I mean, anybody who's been to the grocery store knows, yeah. or the gas pump, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. the gas station. Are they talking about raising the base student allocation on the state level?
They are. That's House Bill 272. Representative Story has put that out. And that is one that does increase the BSA for 2 years. So that helps with that forward funding piece. And then also House Bill 273 actually is set, designed around inflation proofing is what it's kind of what it's designed for. So it's based on just that sort of idea that, you know, we can't just keep doing this every year, every couple of years, you know, trying to play catch up or freezing things for years on, at a time like we have been. And then trying to play catch up. So I think that there's pretty good traction on these bills, probably more than we've seen in the past years. And I think some of it is because of the oil revenue right now. So as we can see at the pumps. So the good thing is there's that sort of that money that's coming into play with looking at school bond debt reimbursement and all those pieces. I think there's some will there. I think there's some financial wherewithal, you know, to maybe make this happen right now. Does seem to be moving forward, but they're still, you know, hot and heavy in the middle of it. I mean, there was, you know, I get texts all the time about, I'm sure Sarah does, I think all of our board members do too, but, you know, just doing testimony about everything. And again, 8 o'clock this morning on the Reads Act. And yeah, another one at 1:30 today, I think, about school bond debt reimbursement and trying to look back at the moratorium that's been in place since 2017 and opening that up, and then also trying to go back to some of those reimbursement rates from the past, looking at like the 70% rate reimbursement rates, 60% rather than more of the 50% rate, which has been with the last few projects that we did was more at that 50-50 rate. So yeah, so there's some good things moving. It's hot right in the middle of it.
Yeah. What's the update on Reads Act? What is there? That's been something that's been talked about for a number of years. Mm-hmm. But that would, you know, that would mean a lot of changes for school districts all over the state. Mm-hmm. Maybe not on day one, but, right. You know, eventually.
Yeah, a lot of conversation about the preschool, the early childhood, you know, the early education component of that, and trying to work that into the BSA as well. So funding for that, rather than it being a grant cycle, which is what it kind of is now. They're trying to work that in to be more of just if you're going to do it and you offer one and it's an approved program, you receive a certain amount of funding. And right now, I think it's set at a 0.5 rather than a 1.0 for each per student allocation. But so that's a big component. And then, of course, as we've talked over the last really, like you said, couple of years, you know, looking at those individual the reading proficiency levels and really focusing on that reading proficiency by third grade. And so everything, you know, kind of focuses on that. And that means support from the state level and support within the district and looking at individual plans and doing the progress monitoring and all those things, which those things we really already have in place. We have those tools, but just probably more specific, more regular, I guess, communication about it, probably more often. Again, we're fortunate we do have Title I support here through teachers and aides, so we have a pretty robust program, but there'll be lots more work to do, as I think we talked last time, as Sarah said. So
it might be tied to base student allocation. Do you like that idea of having a base student allocation, and then, because that would be, it just seems like maybe it could be more secure than
a grant? I think that's a huge component. That I see as being a positive in that is that if they're going to, and right now it does still say optional pre-K, which is always a little bit challenging too, because you kind of get into that. So if it's like right now having the, you know, school isn't really required until you're 7 still. So that always makes it challenging too. You know, there's sort of statute that says this, but then there's these other requirements that come. And we obviously want our kids to come to school as kindergartners, of course. And if we offer pre-K as we did this year, and expanding that could be an opportunity with funding that way and working with our local partners, you know, as well, local preschool partners. But I think it does make it more secure rather than a grant process. So,
Sarah, did you want to add anything?
All the bills. I'm trying to get on board with this one. It frustrates me on so many levels. And one of them is even that is you're going to have this kind of requirement that kids have to read by third grade, but unwillingness from the legislature and even the governor to require kids to be at school sooner than that. So we're still going to put you off till 7 potentially. but then we're going to make sure your school is making sure you're reading by a certain age. And so to me, it's frustrating when those issues aren't. And for years, the Association of Alaska School Boards has told the legislature, you need to lower the age, and they won't do it.
Yeah.
It's been in one of the recommended resolutions, or one of the resolutions that we have that vote on almost every year at the annual meeting. And so it's just, and I think I just was reading an article last night that the governor said, I'm not going to sign anything unless that Reads Act is in there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to veto things on the budget. And I thought, I'm getting political now, but I'm frustrated as a board member. Fortunately, we have a really good program here, but we still have kids that are struggling, and it's not for lack of effort from the school district. It's other things in their life a lot of times that can make a child struggle that aren't being recognized. Or maybe they didn't show up to school until they were six. Or, you know, the socioeconomic side of things that are being completely ignored. So it's a bill that is going, or if it becomes law, is going to put more work on a district already, and it's frustrating when we have a good program here already that it could just mean more paperwork.
Yeah.
You know, that it's, so that's my own, but I know we may be stuck with it anyway, but it seems to be the future is mandating lots of things and letting districts try and figure out how to do it. But hopefully at least this sounds like, you know, that there'll be at least some money tied to it to pay staff or get staff. That's the other problem, though, is if you can't find someone, really do your job. I don't know. It's a circular problem, but
there are a lot of districts in the state to, you know, need reading specialists and things like that.
And trying to find them.
Yeah.
We're very lucky here.
I mean, it's 'tis the season for politics. So they're, you know, the state's thick in the budget process right now. They were talking about a $5,500 payout. And some people are saying, well, you know, instead of that PFD at $4,000, whatever, and then the energy check for $1,300, some people were talking about forward funding education as an option instead of the $5,500 per Alaskan. But, you know, by the end of the day, it could change.
Yes, that's kind of where we are every day.
So more money talk, though. The borough is considering an increase in its budget to the school district of $200,000, right? What's the history there and with that proposal?
Yeah. So in my time here, and Sarah could jump in on this anytime as well, the school district has requested the same amount, the same $1.8 million from the borough for their contribution to the local district. And so it's remained the same in my time since 2000. And that's not funding to the cap. They could fund for more. And, you know, we can ask for more. They could fund more. It's their, you know, decision. And so we've been able to, you know, we do have a good working relationship with the borough. They also kind of hold the Secure Rural Schools funds that come in, the federal dollars that come in to the community that are used for schools and roads, which is always a funny, I don't know, that's just always funny to me, those two things. But anyway, and so they do use some of that to offset the $1.8 million the contribution that they do give. And I believe this year they're looking at using $1.4 from their general fund and $600,000 from the Secure Rural Schools. And there is an account of that. You know, they have saved that money over the years. And we've all known that it's there. It's all, you know, public in there. And it is available to us to use for sometimes capital projects as well, or like they'll use it for some of the contribution to the district. So this year, looking at our enrollment numbers and some of the other fixed costs, as we're all dealing with price at the pump, our utility and fuel and bills are astronomical and continuing. I mean, it's another 10 cents I just saw for fuel increase. It's just, I don't know where the end is with it, but we are well over budget in that already this year, and are moving funds into that. And actually, that's our revision is going to be very, very small tonight. We were actually hoping we would have a little more to show on the other side, as far as a little more to carry over, but it's going to come in fairly close. And it's really coming, it's because of the fuel cost. I mean, that's bar none. That's exactly what it is. It's electricity, utilities, fuel. So that's a killer. that's going to take a lot of districts to some pretty ugly places. So I know they're talking about that at the state level as well, kind of like you said, the one-time payouts and all those things too. So, I mean, again, who knows what they'll do with that. So we're looking at that money to help offset some of those costs and then just our enrollment numbers here. So that's, you know, we've been on the decline for, 3-4 years now, and it's not really just a COVID thing. I mean, we do a pretty good job of looking at where families are, and Sarah with her other hat as a real estate agent could tell you that, you know, we have lots of homes that are sold and people that are renting them, and they don't either, some don't live here and some don't have kids, and we're losing families that have kids and not necessarily replacing them with people that have more kids. So it just kind of is what it is. So our numbers are not, they're looking more like 410, 412 this year, which is down from 426. And those are, you know, who knows, maybe we have a couple more families that move in and have lots of kids, which would be wonderful, and we'll be in a little different position, but it is, you know, it is where we are. And so, so we went to them with that request, and I sounds like it went through the first reading, and we'll see what the next couple of meetings bring. So
that was the first time the district has requested an increase in over 22 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
It's been a long time since we had a raise. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm glad that we have a great work, you know, a good working relationship with them. But I do remember a period of time early on that it was pretty contentious. And even then it was tough because I think back even 20 years ago, there was more help with maintenance items at the building. So we have actually had a loss aside from inflation.
Yeah.
Less support. The Public Works actually helped with some of the ongoing maintenance and repairs at the building, since they are, you know, owned by the borough. And then eventually that was removed, but the 1.8 remained. So you know, it's been, I would argue, less and less each year of financial support. So it's good to see kind of an increase, but I wouldn't necessarily call it an increase. It's still probably just covering what's needed, barely. Know, it'll be wisely used, but
And I think looking at the capital project budget as well, that's something that we have been managing pretty much on our own for the last 5-6 years. And so knowing that those requests are probably going to start increasing a little more over the next few years as well, because even these projects that we were just referring to, school bond debt and all those, there's a requirement, you know, for a participating share. So if it's 50-50, that's a chunk of change. If you have a $1 million project, that's $500,000. So those are the kinds of things that we'll be having to do a lot more close work, I think, with the borough in the coming years to make really good use of the Secure Rural Schools funds and all those pieces. So
okay. What about the new principal you hired? Somebody for the middle and high school. That seemed pretty quick, like the process went pretty fast. Because Rick Dormer announced his resignation after 13 years. He's going to Ketchikan.
Yes.
And then you hired somebody named Ambler Moss, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What can you tell us about him and the process?
Yeah. So I think as you were referencing, the hiring situation is pretty challenging. So you know, 2 or 3 pages, I think, in the newspaper this week here in Petersburg with job openings. I think we're all, you know, seeing that in lots of sectors of our society, in our community, in our state, and certainly nationally. And education is absolutely taking a huge hit. The last couple of years have been exceptionally challenging. And so that being said, we have started a process that's a little more streamlined than it has been in the past. So, you know, typically we sort of have the you post a position, you have a certain amount of time, you look at your applicants, and you hopefully are able to, you have a committee, bring, you know, do your initial screening interviews and all those kinds of things. And then you hopefully have a process where you're able to bring, you know, your top 2 or 3 candidates to town, and you give everybody kind of that opportunity of being able to meet and provide feedback and all those things. But, you know, just in the process that we started when the position closed, as I started doing some initial screening, I probably had five or six, you know, I'd reach out to, oh, what do you, you know, checking in about availability. Oh, nope, sorry, I've already taken another job. Oh, nope, sorry, I already took another job. So, so we knew that things were going to look already would need to be conducted in a little bit more of a quick manner in that sense, while still being thorough about making reference checks and doing, of course, all the background work that you have to do. So, so a lot more front end work has gone in by myself and the hiring committee as well, just to move this along and make those connections on the front end. So we did feel really, really fortunate that we had two really strong applicants. We had a number, but we ended up interviewing a couple of really good applicants and feel really fortunate to have found somebody of his experience, expertise, who had a brief stint up here, has done some overseas work and a lot of work in the lower 48 as well, and is looking for this type of an opportunity. It just happens to be, I think, the right time for him too, and for us. So I'm pretty excited about it. I'm actually really excited about it. And the committee was unanimous in its decision, and that always feels good. And we're bringing him up here this week. So
yeah, I know. I noticed that several days, Thursday through Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is there going to be an opportunity for the public to meet him?
Yes. So he does come in on Thursday, and he'll be able to spend some time. We have some meetings tentatively scheduled where he'll get to meet with maybe the student body government groups, spend some time with the teachers and the staff and get to meet them and just check out the campus in general and look for some housing options, all those kinds of things outside of school, of course. And then on Friday evening, we'll be having a kind of a community family meet and greet, kind of informal opportunity for people at the high school library from 5 to 6 or however long it goes. And we'll get more information out there, but it'll probably be 5 to 6 is what we're tentatively scheduling right now with him. And yeah, he's a go-getter. I think he's going to bring some great energy to our district, and we're excited about it.
So is this a one-year contract, and is that normal for the position?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Principal contracts are 1 year only, and so an exempt contract, similar to director of finance, and, you know, so it's an exempt contract. So it is a yearly contract, and the board will hopefully officially approve that tonight comfortable as they are with the recommendation, and then we'll move forward with allowing an opportunity for him to get to meet all of us and see everything in person. And he's bringing his wife with him. She's from Myanmar, and she's recently become a citizen of the United States. And so, yeah, they've done he's done a lot of interesting things in his life. He's a really, got a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. I'm excited. I think he's going to be great.
I did read that he had been to Hooper Bay as a principal. I've been there a few times, and it's out on the Bering Sea coast. A very, very traditional Yupik village of about maybe 1,200 people or so.
Yeah.
Yupik speaking. Mm-hmm. English is second language there. So.
Yes, yes. Wow. And he has an extensive bilingual background. He speaks fluent Spanish, but he's done a lot of education, a lot of teaching, and a lot of work in a lot of different school districts that have a lot of different languages spoken. So he himself has a pretty extensive background in bilingual education and I think he'll bring that ability to, he's worked and lived in a lot of different cultures. So he has a lot of experience with that. And I feel very comfortable with that part of his background, you know, that he will come to a community, and that's, you can tell that from him, and certainly from all of his references, that's, you know, that he'll come in, he'll understand a community, he'll get to know people, and, you know, bring his flavor to it, but has a very strong sense of coming in and understanding a culture wherever he goes. So I think that will be a great, great way to come into Petersburg. So,
yeah. All right. Well, before we go, board policies, Sarah, there's like a dozen that you're going to be. Anything that you want to highlight? This is it mostly minor language changes?
A lot of it was minor language changes. Yeah, I'm trying to think of I was rereading them last night because I had kind of blown through them the first time, since we do have a policy committee that goes through them more carefully and then makes recommendations based on that. But a lot of it was just, I almost want to say semantics, but not a huge amount of change. There was a lot done to our, I think it's our second reading of the wellness one. Mm-hmm. But that was also, again, of kind of shoring up what we actually can do as a district versus, I think it was a pretty broad policy to begin with, so it was nice to revisit that one. But the rest of them are pretty minor changes, even changing things like income to revenue. So still got to go through the process.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And COVID, it seems like cases are low at the district.
They are. We've been hit pretty hard here recently with staff cases, which always makes it challenging. Of course, for people who are not feeling well, that's also still happening. We do people who have it. Some kind of breeze through after a couple of days, and some are do not feel well at all and are still experiencing, you know, being tired and that sort of thing when they come back. So that's been challenging. But overall, I would say a number of cases, it's just kind of been like a consistent sort of number. It feels like we're at least on the other side, I think, of kind of the community large spike that was happening kind of a couple of weeks ago. We did have our prom. We haven't seen a huge spike from that, which is always good at this point. And just kind of looking toward a few more of those activities. We've got track going and baseball going, and those are nice outdoor activities, which is great. Lots of air. And then looking toward graduation on the 31st, of course, and wanting to keep everybody as healthy as possible for that. And things are looking good for that. So, yeah.
Good. It's kind of a countdown, you know, yeah. Keeping everything together for the next few weeks. anything else that we should touch on real quick before we go?
I don't think so.
No.
Well, it's kind of, the countdown to the end of the school year, and then we start all over again.
That's right. You know, I might just say I did put this on here, but I think just also last week, I know we had a lot of activities going on, and you probably knew as a parent too, but just really recognizing our teachers and staff. Last week was Teacher and Staff Appreciation Week here in the district, but I just think it's really important to, you know, I know we say it a lot, but I don't know if people really can understand the depth of just work that has gone in to providing education in the midst of a lot of disruption and challenges. And our teachers and staff have been incredibly resilient. Our kids have been incredibly resilient. It's a lot of work. And even just referencing when we have people out, of course, we feel bad because people are not feeling well. And then we're trying to, take very limited numbers of staff members to keep things going. And we still do not have a good sub pool out there, and
ooh, that is one of the policies we are changing. We're increasing the sub rate.
That's right. That's on there too.
Maybe make it slightly more.
That's on there too. Yep.
That's one of our policies. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not part of the personnel.
No, it's a separate. Correct. Yeah, it's separate. Mm-hmm. But we did adjust that. It's not significant, but it's what we can afford to do at this time. But hopefully, it'll entice maybe someone.
Yeah. And one of the things we are doing with that is
this is a new one.
Yeah,
right?
It is. And one of the things we are doing is we have this incredible group of retirees in town. And I know we talk about them and try to recognize their efforts often, but we really could not have gone through these last couple of years without them. We have this just amazing group of four or five retired teachers that just kind of keep hanging in there with us and are so consistent, come in, do all kinds of different jobs, and they've just been incredible. And, so we're going to be kind of doing a little bit of gradation of rates of pay. So we're upping the amount from our people who have bachelor's degrees that can do non-certified subbing to $125 a day, our certified teacher sub rate to $150 per day, and then I have a PSD retired certified teacher sub rate, which is $175 a day. And I think it's really important to recognize their efforts. They come in at the drop of a hat. They go all over the district. We just could not have done it without them. So it's just a way of really, I think, acknowledging that consistency for us. They come in, they teach, and they really teach. I mean, they just carry forward. You know, we've had maternity leaves, we've had people sick, and they've just kept us afloat. And we are also increasing the classified sub rate. So that's up to $15 an hour, so which is still probably not where it should be, but it's better than it was.
Is
so.
That a percentage increase or is it a set dollar
it's
amount?
Just a dollar amount, yeah. Just up to $15 per hour, okay. From up from $11.50. So it was really, time.
And were the other ones, how much of an increase?
Those the non-certified was 100, so we're raising that to 125, and raising certified from 140 to 150, and then providing that rate increase for our retirees who come back and have a current license. So,
okay.
Yeah, retirees specifically from the district. I think there's got to be some acknowledgement to the fact that they literally can jump in and know the old system.
Yep.
You know, it's not like it's...
Yep. Yeah. Not a retraining. They come in and they are just...
pick up where it's left off. Yeah.
Yeah. So just acknowledging that, those efforts, we could not have kept the ship going forward without them. So, yeah.
Yeah. There would have been a lot more school closures this year.
Yeah.
Just because we didn't have subs. Yeah. So, and absolutely. I don't think that's going to disappear next fall.
No.
That could still be a risk with any illnesses, really.
Yeah. I think it will be
whether
too.
Whether it's a pandemic or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's hope for the best.
Yeah.
Let's remind listeners about the meeting. The meeting, of course, it's a regular meeting tonight, and a regular meeting of the school board, and that's going to be happening in the middle and high school library at the school starting at 6 o'clock. It's open to the public. You can also listen in to KFSK because we will be broadcasting the meeting live, and we'll also be posting it later. We record it every time, and we post it on our website if you don't have time during the meeting.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today, and we'll see you tonight.
Sounds good. Thanks.